just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic. Common sense. Compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. It is Saturday and I have some bad news for you. I told you that Ed would be on this show and he's not going to be. It's not Ed's fault this time. It's my fault. We had it all scheduled to do a recording at our normal time yesterday and everything was all set. And then shit changed. But I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, yesterday was my granddaughter's birthday, the actual day of her birth. And we have a party at our place planned for Sunday, tomorrow. And it's going to be a big event. The whole family will be here. It'll be fun. It'll be exciting. But my son called and said he was going to have Junie during her actual birthday. And if we wanted to come over and see her on her birthday, that we could do that. So drop everything. We're going over there, hanging out with Junie for a couple of hours. So I didn't get to record with Ed. We'll record again next week, and Ed will definitely be on. He's got his shit squared away. I will have my stuff squared away, and he'll be back on, and he'll be a sight for sore eyes. Ed always adds a lot to the program. We miss him. I know you do. I do. So it'll be good to have him back, and I'm sorry that because of me, he's not on the show today. Don't blame him for this. All right. We've got stuff to talk about, though. There's plenty of stuff that's going on. Of course, we had Donald Trump's criminal trial going on in the Manhattan District. They wrapped up the week. David Pecker finished up his testimony. And then there were two other people that testified, very short periods of time, very short testimony. Now, David Pecker's situation is really interesting. We hear what we hear from the media, and sometimes it's hard to put it all together and know exactly what's going on. So I'll kind of boil it down into specifics, what happened with David Pecker on the stand. A lot of things came to light. None of it good for Donald Trump. But what David Pecker did through some text messages and his testimony, he really attached Donald Trump and himself to going forward and trying to interfere in the 2016 election, killing stories, paying Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal to try to affect the election. Now, you know, Donald Trump always says, no, it was just, I didn't want Melania to know. I didn't want to be embarrassed. And that's just not the case. And David Pecker tied all those things together. Now, how do we know that they were specifically trying to affect the election? Well, David Pecker on the stand under oath said that very thing. He was asked, were you trying to do this to protect Donald Trump from information getting out before the election? And he said yes. So I don't know what more you can expect out of somebody. One of the things that he said about Donald Trump, he clarified whether or not Donald Trump knew about this. You know, that's what Donald Trump will always do. Well, those people did it. Those people did it. I didn't know anything about this. Well, David Pecker made it very clear, something we already knew, something I've talked about before. Donald Trump is a control freak. That's just the nature of being a narcissist. He has got his hands all over everything. And as David Pecker said, yeah, of course Donald Trump was involved. He's a micromanager. Hell, Michael Cohen couldn't take me out for lunch without an okay from Donald Trump. So basically what David Pecker did as the first witness basically tied Donald Trump to this whole thing, proved that he was part of the whole thing, proved he knew about it, and proved he knew it was illegal. See, that's the other part. Well, yeah, I did it, but I didn't know it was illegal. Yeah, they did. And because David Pecker talked about that. David Pecker had gone through something similar back in the early 2000s when Arnold Schwarzenegger had asked him to catch and kill some stories when he was about to be governor. And there was some questionable stuff going on in terms of election law. So when he got to this point with Donald Trump, he was a little nervous about it. He was a little conscious about it. So he went to his company's lawyers, and then he went to an election lawyer. Now, we don't know what was said in those meetings, but even after doing that, he still chose to do it. Now, he did try to back out. He called Michael Cohen and says, yeah, I don't know. This may not work. And then, of course, Michael Cohen said, well, the boss is going to be pretty upset about it. The bottom line is he knew it was illegal. Donald Trump knew it was illegal, and yet they still did it. So as I was saying in a TikTok, if you know all these things in the first witness, why do you even need to go on? He clearly broke the law. That's enough for me. Let's send the jury away to deliberate and get this motherfucker done. But that's not what's going to happen. Now, after the defense team cross-examined David Pecker, it was interesting. They were trying to discredit him, which I find incredibly funny. Think about what they're trying to do here. They're trying to discredit the former publisher of the National Enquirer. I think he pretty much discredited himself every day of the week he went to work for the National Enquirer, but nonetheless, they tried, and they didn't do very well. They tried to take him down, and it didn't work. Now, after David Pecker was sent off the witness stand, then they brought up Donald Trump's executive assistant and a banker for Michael Cohen. It's all very interesting. We'll talk more about this in a few minutes, but that's kind of what happened yesterday. Now, of course, we have some emails, not a ton of them. Yesterday, that's all we had was emails. Not today. We just have a few, but as always, they are good emails. First one says, hi, Mike, I have an important message for all Republicans out there. And you know that's a signal for the notification that this is sarcasm from Panzer. Okay, with the growing popularity of such podcasts as the Rational Boomer podcast, spewing such notions as love for your next of kin, fellow humans, searching for the truth, being civilized, or being just plainly rational with facts is all fake news, a hoax, and a witch hunt. True Republicans know that this country was successfully built on greed, lies, war, warmongering, more lies, grift, selfishness, bullying, and above all, looking strong in the eyes of the public like President Donald J. Trump is right now. No wonder why there is hundreds of thousands of people manifesting for him outside the court every day. This fine man is truly showing us what a great leader should be. Putrid, sweaty, confused, hangry, lying, disconnected from reality, chauvinistic, and good-looking. How can he not win the next election? Go MAGA, Panzer. Again, sarcasm. Don't go after this guy. He's just sending us these funny emails, and I appreciate it. You know, it's funny about Donald Trump. He keeps insisting that the police in New York, are holding back the throngs of MAGA people that want to come to the court, which is just not true. There's a few MAGA fucks that show up to the court, but not the throngs that he suggests. He is so small that even though these people don't show up, he has to try to lie to the general public by saying, oh, they're out there. They just can't get through because the police are holding them back. Seems like they got through on January 6th of 2021 with the police there. So what happens? These MAGA fucks are now a bunch of pussies and can't get through? It's sad for Donald Trump. He is legitimately pathetic and pitiful, and it gets more so every day. Thank you, Panzer, for the bit of sarcasm. Next one says, hi, Mike, just a quick thought as we wait for SCOTUS to decide on the presidential immunity thing. The U.S. government divided into three branches as described by U.S.gov. The Constitution of the United States divides the federal government into three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial. This ensures that no individual or group will have too much power. If immunity from prosecution was given to one branch, wouldn't it be necessary to give the other two branches immunity to equalize the power? I don't think I've heard this potential can of worms mentioned. What is your take on it, Tom? Well, I think you make a good point. I hadn't considered that, but according to the Constitution, that would be true. You know, the thing about it is this is why I've said all along, the idea that the Supreme Court might give Donald Trump total immunity is so ridiculous. It shouldn't even been brought up to the Supreme Court, but for whatever egomaniacal reason, the Supreme Court decided to hear it. Now, the thing about it is it's not going to happen. I've gotten people coming to my page saying, yeah, well, they overturned Roe v. Wade. Naive much? Fuck you. Come on. Are you kidding me? We're talking about two different things. We're talking about overturning the Constitution, undermining democracy, and having the Supreme Court do it. It's one thing to deal with Roe v. Wade, but overturning the whole Constitution? Make no mistake, no matter what they said in this hearing or this argument case, the Supreme Court knows what the fuck is up. They know the potential dangers from doing this sort of thing. I mean, if they were to give Donald Trump immunity, that would mean Joe Biden has immunity. That would mean every other president in the future has immunity. And if Joe Biden has immunity, he could send out the Marines and whack Donald Trump, all his family, and every member of the Supreme Court if he wanted to, according to this immunity thing. Or he could just throw them in Guantanamo Bay. This argument is so ridiculous, and this lawyer did such a poor job while he was there. The idea that they're going to give him immunity is ridiculous. Now, if you watch the media, they're going to sit there and say, well, it could be if this happens, we're going to have all kinds of trouble. How often do you have to hear that and still believe it? They constantly do this, and then when it comes out the way it should come out, then they start to back off of it and jump for joy and are yelling and screaming and saying, oh, this is great. See, that's the point. They're trying to create this turmoil, this consternation, so that you're hanging on the edge of your seat. And then when we finally win, it's a great relief. The problem with that is you spend a lot of time, you waste a lot of time being stressed out. And don't we all have enough shit to be stressed out about? It's funny. I keep getting people coming to my page, quoting these things that are going to happen. And I keep telling them, you know, here's the thing. Try to figure out where this information has come from. And I'll guarantee you, 9 times out of 10, it's come from a Republican source. They put it out in the narrative. It bounces around for a while. And then people don't know where it comes from. They don't identify it as propaganda or bullshit. And they hear it and they go, oh, that must be real. And then they embrace it. And it's not just Republicans that do that. It's Democrats as well. It's frustrating. And they come to me whining and crying. And as I've said before, I don't want to listen to the fatalistic when they come to my page, because you're wrong and you're of no value to us fighting to make things better in this country. You know, throughout my life, I've been in situations where I felt like there's a turning point where I've dealt with something for a period of time. And then I came to this point and I just felt or recognized that things are going to change. And every time, that's what it is. It's a sense. It's a feeling. It's not something psychic or paranormal. It's just a gut feeling. And unlike a lot of folks, I always go with my gut feelings. I take my first choice. See, the problem is most people get that gut feeling and then they second guess themselves. They're not confident enough to just go with it. I do that because I've had a lot of success with it. And at this moment in time in this country, when it comes to politics, the Democrats and the Republicans, I sense that time. I sense a turning point. That turning point will be the election. People say, how can you feel confident? How can I not? Everything is going the way of the Democrats and everything's going against the Republicans. If you can't see that, you're not fucking paying attention. And with all that information, you'd feel the same way too. Instead, people want to worry. Or as I've said before, you know, they've been disappointed so many times because Donald Trump has gotten away with so many things. They'd rather just pout about it. Well, I never get what I want, so I'll just don't want this now. It's not going to happen. I won't believe it. Who do you think you're influencing? Now, a kid will do that to his parents, you know. They'll ask if they can go out. Mom and dad will say no. Then later, they'll tell them, why don't you go out and play? And they'll say, I'm not going out. You don't want me to go out, so I'm not going out. That's the behavior. And that's what frustrates me. I'm talking to adults here. Fucking grow up, smell the roses, and look at what's going on. Take a look at the facts. But they don't want to do that. And it's because of what I've told you before. Too many people in this country go with their emotions first. Their emotions control them. They throw in the fear, and then they just react. This is exactly what Donald Trump is doing, and a lot of politicians do. If you can pull back on the emotions, instead of the emotions controlling you, you control the emotions. That's how it's supposed to be, and it can be done. It takes a little time to get back into that mode, but you can change it if you want to. Takes a little forcing the issue, and then eventually you catch on and it becomes normal. But this is what happens. We've got all these people up in their emotions, scared to death, and that's how they think and that's how they respond. And that's of no value to the effort. It really isn't. So fucking stop it. All right. The next email, the last email, says, Hi, Mike, I love your daily commentary. You made it abundantly clear that you don't like it when your viewers whine about the polls, any number of daily issues which allow Trump to slither his way back into the White House or get away with a lifetime of criminal activity. Oh, that's coincidental. Yeah, I was just talking about that. Okay, moving on. I must confess, I'm one of those people, but keep my worries to myself. Good move. Your daily commentary and rock-steady confidence help me cope with the daily barrage of BS. I have a perspective I'd like to share with you. It occurred to me that the reason we're so scared is that we've been abused, like I said earlier. We've been raped by Trump. We've been run over by the Republican Party. We are roadkill. I liken it to someone who almost drowns while swimming but is rescued. Now, see, that's the point. We are roadkill. You're playing victim there. We are not victims here. We are the aggressors. As long as you think of yourself as a victim, that's what you're going to be. Don't think of yourself as a victim ever. How eager will the person be to go swimming again? Speaking of rape, how does something so horrific affect a woman's ability to function in a future relationship? I can tell you firsthand, not easily. My wife was raped when she was 13 years old. I see the consequences. You can't imagine. Americans have been raped. We've been abused. We've been tortured for 8 years. We're scared as hell of winding up like Russia or North Korea. But here's a positive thought. I'm actually more on board with you after having watched a video today by Peter Zeihan. He explained mathematically why Trump can't win. This really helped me understand why you are so confident. Perhaps you might expand on this. I'm sure it would go a long way with your viewers. It's good psychotherapy. Thanks for all you do, Tom. Now, I watched the video. It's a good video. This guy's obviously very popular and very knowledgeable. I think he has like 700,000 followers on YouTube, and that's significant. But as I'm watching the video, and I'm not trying to put this guy down. This guy's brilliant. He absolutely is. And I would watch it. Go look for Peter Zeihan, Zeihan on YouTube. I would suggest watching it because apparently he's got something I don't to get it into people's skull. Because when I watch this video, he's saying pretty much the same things I've been saying. Now, he comes from it from an educational or academic background, and I come from it from a logic and just kind of analyzing the situation. But the things he's talking about is pretty much what I've been saying all along. Now, maybe he's just more articulate about it than I am, and if that's the case, I would recommend you watch that video too, because I don't care where you get it or what it takes to get it into people's minds. I'm all for it. I'll keep spewing the shit I do, but if there's something out there that can get it through clearer and quicker, by all means, jump on that shit. But Peter is of the mind that I am, and that mindset is that people will sit and tell me, well, Donald Trump could win, and I'll say why, and they say, I just feel it. Well, sorry, that's not fucking good enough. That makes no sense. Again, you're in your feelings, you're fearful, you're worried, and that's what you're making your decisions on. And if you make your decisions on fear and worry, you are going to fucking fail. You don't go into anything beaten or the victim. You go in as a champion and you fight to the best of your ability. That doesn't mean you're going to win every time, but you're going to win more often than not. And that's the least we can hope for. I get the question all the time. What makes you think Donald Trump won't win? Well, what makes you think he is? Give me one data point. Give me one example of anything that tells you Donald Trump can win. I mean, Donald Trump's in primaries now, and he's losing 15% of the vote to Nikki Haley, and she's not even in the race anymore. If Donald Trump gets convicted of a crime, which he most certainly will in the next month and a half or so, he's going to lose 15 to 20% of people that were willing to vote for him. Now, understand this. This is what Peter Zeehan has said, and I've tried to say this too, and maybe I've not been clear about it. If Donald Trump isn't in the race, and we're just taking Republicans and Democrats, there are more Democrats than there are Republicans. There are more Democrats than there are Republicans. Now, the Republicans, if you're a Republican candidate for the presidency, you not only have to get all the Republicans, but you got to get some independents too. At this point, Donald Trump has pretty much lost the independents. We've seen that in the primaries. He maybe lost 10%, maybe 15% of those people. So just that alone makes it questionable whether he can even win the election in November. But then you have to factor in the fact that the Republican Party is divided. You got MAGA, you got the normal people, relatively speaking. You got the people in the middle that are just pussy-ass bitches and don't know which way to fucking turn. They'll just jump on any bandwagon that they feel is going to be more successful for them. If Donald Trump doesn't have the independents and he doesn't have a unified Republican Party, there is no way he can win. There's just no way he can win. There's not enough people willing to vote for Donald Trump. It's as simple as that. Common sense tells you that he can't win. Now, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I don't see how I'm wrong, because every day it gets worse for Donald Trump. Every fucking day it gets worse. And then you factor in something else. I'm getting a lot of people coming to my page and saying, oh, the young people are mad at Joe Biden because of Israel or because of TikTok. The canceling of TikTok. But let's focus on Israel. They're saying that young people won't vote for Joe Biden because of his stance on Israel. And I just say this, and answer to this honestly if you can. Do you really believe that millennials and Gen Zs find the stance on Israel more important than the overturning of Roe v. Wade? The stuff that will affect them personally every day for the rest of their lives. Do you really think Israel is more important than Roe v. Wade? Please, motherfucker. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. And then if we talk about the shutting down of TikTok, if you ever read the bill, you realize it's a horribly written bill. It's not enforceable. It's going to go to court, and it's going to be shut down because of the First Amendment. Don't tell me TikTok can't compete with the government. They got a lot of motherfucking money. This whole thing, if there's any process to even take down TikTok, it's going to take literally years to do it. But the thing about it is, because this bill is so weak, it suggests to me it's a ploy. It's a strategy. There's somebody's trying to game the system. And this is what I was talking about before. This whole narrative that young people are mad at Joe Biden because of Israel. that young people are mad at Joe Biden because of TikTok. I wonder where that started. Do you think it was some thoughtful Democrat that put it out there and did a study and saw that it was true? Because I've not seen any studies. I've heard a lot of people complain about it and make this point, but I've never seen any actual studies from it. And haven't we seen that over the years? That Republicans come out with a narrative. Haven't we said that? The Republicans are good with pushing their agenda or messaging, and the Democrats are not. What makes you think they're not still doing that with this issue with Israel, and that all young people are going to vote against Joe Biden because of Israel? That sounds like utter bullshit to me, especially when you compare it to overturning Roe v. Wade. And we haven't seen a study on it, so I'm saying it coming from the Republicans. And the TikTok thing is really interesting, too. Republicans are out saying, oh, you can blame Joe Biden for canceling TikTok. Well, TikTok isn't canceled. It isn't going to be canceled. But you know who wrote that bill? It was a fucking Republican. And now they're blaming Democrats for it. I can tell you why the Democrats voted for it, because they knew it was a bullshit bill and they just wanted to get Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan and the Gaza Strip folks done. They knew this was the only way they could do it. And once they did it and got beyond the election, they could start to fix certain things. Young people aren't pissed off about TikTok or Israel more so than the other bullshit we've got going on in this country. They're just not. It makes no sense. There is no logic to it. So, Tom, I thank you for giving me this YouTube thing. I did find it informative. I mean, he said pretty much the same things I've been saying, but it's kind of like my kids, you know? I can sit down and talk to my kids, tell them something very profound, something they need to know, and they'll look at me like, Dad, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But if I tell my brother this very same thing, and then he tells my kids the very same thing, it's as if Jesus came down and gave him the Ten Commandments. That's just the way it is with kids. They don't, you know, they know you all too well. And when you come up with something profound, they're not buying it because it's just my fucking dad, Jesus Christ. But when they get it from a different source, then it hits home. And that doesn't bother me, as long as the good information, the correct information, ultimately hits home. I don't need to take credit for it. I just want the message there and get people to understand it, because the sooner we do that, the sooner we're all going to do better. The thing that frustrates me more about Democrats who have this fatalistic view, I watched it since we started doing this on TikTok. Oh, Donald Trump will never get indicted. He gets indicted. Are they happy? And they say, oh, geez, I was wrong. No, they find something else to be worried about. Oh, he'll never make it to trial. He'll get off. So now he's in trial. Are they happy yet? No, they're not happy yet. They're going to say, oh, he'll never get convicted. Well, he's got 34 felony charges. Alvin Bragg has a 98% conviction rate. He's going to get convicted. And once he gets convicted, they'll say he'll never go to jail. And then if he goes to jail, he'll just get out. Some people can't see the forest for the fucking trees. Even when they're proved wrong, and instead of something bad, something good happens, they still can't embrace it. They still can't see a light at the end of the tunnel. They still can't be positive about it. And I'm going to tell you this. If you live your life that way, you're going to lead a miserable life. Not everything is horrible. And when you do run into these horrible things, my experience is you will come out the other side and maybe even have a better situation. We're made to go through these trials and tribulations to learn and experience and try to figure things out. But a lot of people don't want to do that. What they want to do is if something bad comes up, they want to curl up in a ball and just feel sorry for themselves. Well, I'm sorry. If you sit around and feel sorry for yourself and hope against hope someone's going to feel sorry for you too and help you out, not going to happen. It's on you. to either stand up and do what you're supposed to do or just sit in the corner for the rest of your life and cry and worry. I'm sorry to be tough about this, but I've experienced both. When I was young, I had that same mindset. And when I realized it didn't work, I changed it. And you know what? It works a lot better. If you're confident and you push forward, you're going to win a lot more. And frankly, I'm in this, the game of life, as it were, to win. And I don't mean get rich and famous. I mean just win. Lead a happy, stress-free life. We should all be striving for that. But if you keep accepting the stress, you're never going to get there. You've got to refuse the stress and just say, fuck it. I'm in control here. I got this down, and we're going to be fine. And as I say, 9 times out of 10, if you take that tact, you will be fine. All right, we are going to wrap up. No, we're not going to wrap up. We're going to take a quick break. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. We're back on the Rational Boomer podcast. As I said, I promised Ed to be here today. He's not. My fault. On me. He will be here next week. Come hell or high water, we're going to have Ed back on the show within a week or so. All right. Now, there's both a political expert and a legal expert have agreed that Donald Trump's lawyers are failing to craft a story for the jury in the former president's first criminal case involving the alleged hush money. I think a lot of people are wondering, how's the case going? It's not on TV. We're hearing reports. We're hearing mixed reports because, of course, the media wants to scare motherfuckers. But as I told you early on in the podcast, what happened with David Pecker pretty much wraps up the case for me. Now, I'm not saying it wraps it up for the jury or for the prosecution, but it's clear Donald Trump has committed crimes and he should be convicted. But then there's the performance of the lawyers. And frankly, the lawyers on Donald Trump's team have performed horribly. They're not good. Now, speaking on a panel for MSNBC's Nicole Wallace, former top Justice Department prosecutor Andrew Weissman, very sharp man, explained that the most important thing in a case is to ensure a juror at least remembers the testimony. Trump's side hasn't been all that memorable, the experts agree. It's too early to say this is where the jury will be. They will definitely take the judge's instructions. Do not deliberate until the end. However, trials are about narratives. And there was a very clear narrative from the state here as to what happened. The lawyers on the prosecution side are very sharp. They had a strategy, and they went forward. And they laid out their story. On Donald Trump's side, there's a problem, because maybe if the lawyers were allowed to lay out a story on Donald Trump's side, they might do better. Unfortunately, the lawyers don't get to choose what their strategy is. They have to listen to Donald Trump and do Donald Trump's bidding. And Donald Trump is a mental midget. Donald Trump is a psychopathic nutcase. There is no rhyme or reason to what he thinks or what he says. And because his lawyers are just parroting what he says, that's how they come off too. So over and above everything else, he's getting some poor representation, not because they're not good enough and they really aren't that great, but it makes it worse because Donald Trump is controlling the whole show and Donald Trump is a fucking mental mess. He explained that the story from the Manhattan district attorney hangs together with the little details that witnesses can add as they come to the stand. The story will come together and make sense. The prosecution is doing what they should be doing. Now, the jury will see it's the state job to put in the details, but this is a very clear story, he continued. On the defense side, however, there is no story. It doesn't hang together. They're flailing. Political analyst John Heilerman said that the defense needs a counter-narrative, and there hasn't been one thus far, and there isn't likely to be one when it's all said and done. Now, the group recalled a Thursday conversation about David Pecker, the former chief of AMI, National Enquirer. In one moment, the defense was making him out to be a liar. The next, they were characterizing him as misremembering a name. The consistency isn't there for the defense. Now, Nicole Wallace said the counter narrative is necessary because by the end of it, the jury will have heard a lot of witnesses explaining that everything needs to be brought together. The credibility of David Pecker came through. If you thought this was a sleazy dude, the detail of it and the emotional bond that was laid bare makes you think he may be a scoundrel, but he's probably telling the truth. Yeah, I would say he's telling the truth, and he is a scoundrel, and he is slimy, and he is sleazy. But we know why he's telling his truth. He's saving his ass. So he has to tell the truth. If he doesn't tell the truth, he's going to get busted for perjury. So it's reasonable to believe the guy. Now, speaking of David Pecker, he's Donald Trump's longtime friend, former chief of AMI. He detailed their relationship and efforts to work together to help Trump get elected in 2016. Now, the defense team never went after him nor questioned whether he was lying. There's another witness who will likely be similar. Now, speaking to MSNBC on Friday after Pecker finished his testimony, John Heilman said during the 2016 campaign, the only two people who were backstage were his assistant, Rona Graff, and Hope Hicks. Trump never even spoke out about the likes of Steve Bannon or Paul Manafort. Now, Rona Graff was a witness yesterday, and Donald even smiled at her and tried to whisper her a message. She's worked for him for 36 years, so they have a relationship. Now, they were the people who had the most access to him, the one who ran his life in different respects, one more administrative, one more in politics, but I think she will be a fascinating witness, he said. And that's Hope Hicks. She's coming up next week, I believe. Hicks occupies an important place for Trump's physically because she too had access to things that even Graff did not, according to some experts. Now, Heilman said, Hope is more at the nexus where politics, scandal, law, staff, internal politics were involved and came together in communications. She knows the inside of his head better than literally anybody. You'll remember it was said that Hope Hicks was the one that was the only one that could get him to calm down when he was losing his shit. She had some control over Donald Trump, and she knows more about Donald Trump than anybody, probably more than Melania. And she's going to be a witness for the prosecution next week. She certainly isn't going to be a witness for the prosecution to do Donald Trump any favors. And once again, probably has something to do with trying to save her ass. She's a young woman. She has a future, unlike Donald Trump. She wants to continue to have a future, so she's going to have to set herself apart from this Donald Trump shit show that's going over the fucking cliff. Now, former top Justice Department prosecutor Andrew Weissman said that Trump's team tried to impugn Pecker's memory at some times while calling him a liar at others. Weissman called it an odd to go from truths to he doesn't remember well to he's a liar. Now, when it comes to Hicks, Weissman anticipates that it'll be interesting to see how much she's going to corroborate or where she doesn't back him up. He said the defense also rightly tries to get witnesses to talk about the defendant as a good boss. You saw the prosecution do that with David Pecker because it was useful to say this guy who is such a liar, well, he loves this guy. And that's what's interesting about this. Have you noticed Donald Trump has not said one bad word about David Pecker? You have to wonder why. I don't really know why, but there's something different with this person because Donald Trump will turn on fucking anybody. And I don't think he'll turn on Hope Hicks either. Weissman said it'll be interesting where Hope Hicks is on this because there was both a deep loyalty and then there was a very rocky end. Hope for Donald Trump's sake that Hope isn't a woman scorned, because we know what that's going to fucking lead to. Now, this next story is kind of interesting to me. It was almost surreal to me. There were big traffic jams in New York City yesterday, and it wasn't because Donald Trump was in town with his criminal trial. It was because President Joe Biden came to town and he was there to give an interview. Now, it wasn't to give an interview to the New York Times, much to their chagrin. In fact, New York Times got very pissed off about this. But the New York Times hasn't been that charitable to Democrats and Joe Biden. And Joe Biden decided to take an interview with none other than Howard Stern. Now, this seemed really weird to me because I'm old enough to know when Howard Stern started, this motherfucker was a wild man. He was irreverent. He was nasty. He was dirty. He was a fucking goofball. But now he's going to interview the President of the United States. So I watched the video clips, and that's when it got a little surreal. Here's Howard Stern, and we all remember Howard Stern one way, but in this video, Howard Stern is in a suit and a tie. Never fucking seen that, ever. Whether it be on his show or out in public, he's never worn a suit that I've ever seen. And he's sitting across from Joe Biden, and they're carrying on a serious conversation. It was surreal. That's not something you would expect out of Howard Stern. Well, maybe lately, now that he's gotten older, I've gotten older, everybody's gotten fucking older, maybe that's who he is now. But I haven't listened to Howard Stern for years. I only remember back in the days when he had his TV show and he was on in New York and then he was on a syndication thing. Fucker was a wild man. I'm not saying he wasn't funny. I'm not saying I didn't listen to him. But to be sitting all these years later with a president and doing a serious conversation, a serious interview, that seemed weird. But anyway, Biden was interviewed by Howard Stern Friday, a live chat that wasn't particularly groundbreaking other than a declaration that he's happy to debate former President Donald Trump, but the president's campaign teams should still draw valuable lessons from the experience. You remember that Donald Trump had said that he wanted to debate Joe Biden, and Joe Biden hadn't responded. There was no reason for him to respond. We're still quite a ways from the election. We don't even know for sure if he's going to be the nominee. Yes, he has enough delegates, but will he survive mentally, physically, emotionally? Will he survive all the shit he's got to go through? I'm not so sure. But Joe Biden did tell Howard Stern, yeah, I'd be happy to debate him. Now, that's interesting. I don't think that Donald Trump was expecting that, because I think the last thing that Donald Trump wants to do is to debate anybody, to stand up on a stage and expose his diminishing cognitive skills. It's one thing to give a rally when he's got control, but as I've told you before, he's a control freak. He has to have complete control, and in a debate, he doesn't. You have moderators and you have an opponent. And in this particular case, while Joe Biden might be a little slow talking and slow moving, he's cognitively floors above Donald Trump. And he's very experienced and savvy in debates and in politics and in being the president, more so than Donald Trump. I think Biden would take him apart. Now, Donald may want to rant and rave and overtalk people, but I don't know that he's going to get away with that anymore. And I don't even know if he has it in him. You know, you watch him in this court case in the video we do see, and he seems kind of low energy. All this is starting to take its toll, as I expected it might. I don't know how well he would do in a debate, but I'd like to fucking see it. Now, the White House announced the interview shortly before it aired, with Biden visiting SiriusXM studios in person for their one-hour conversation. The president's discussion with Stern ranged over a wide variety of topics, including a lot of nostalgic reminiscing over his childhood, early days in his political career, his grief over the loss of his first wife and infant daughter in a car accident, and son Beau Biden to cancer, and of course, the upcoming November election. Biden also criticized the modern media, although he didn't single out any specific outlet for not being tougher on Trump. I agree. Had they been tough on Trump and called him out on his bullshit from the beginning in 2015 and 2016, we would not be dealing with this shit today. Thank you, fucking media. I think some of them are worried about attacking him, worried about taking him on, he told Stern. Stern commented that he was not sure if Biden was going to debate Trump, and the president immediately replied that he was willing to do so. I am, somewhere. I don't know when. I'm happy to debate him. The interview got the expected backlash from Biden's conservative critics, who pointed out that he can't necessarily provide proof of the tales of his youthful exploits, like his claims he saved multiple children when he worked as a lifeguard. On the flip side, I'm not aware of any proof that it didn't happen, but I digress. Well, that's that's well and good that you bring that up, because we have no proof of Donald Trump's academic record. He claims he was a great student. He claims that he graduated from these colleges. He claims he took his own SAT. We have no proof of that. And the funny thing about Donald Trump is he refuses to provide any proof of anything. And you have the audacity to question Joe Biden. Now, at this moment in Biden's decades-long political career, as they trudge through the last few months before the November election, these Biden tall tales, gaffes, and so on are baked into the cake. Now, a pollster would be hard-pressed to find an actual real-life voter who would say they were going to vote for Biden, except they're concerned because he couldn't provide verification of some anecdote about a spring break trip to Fort Lauderdale. This is exactly what the Republicans do. It's kind of part and parcel to this whole impeachment thing. Oh, he took a bribe. Oh, the Biden crime family. Yet they have no evidence. And it's gotten so bad that James Comer, the man behind this thing, is pretty much letting it fade away. He's gotten frustrated by it. Now, I don't know if he knew there was no evidence or somebody hoodwinked him into believing it, but he sure tried to shove it down the throats of everybody in this country and then came up short. Yet they want to complain about Joe Biden. Now, Rick Wilson from the Lincoln Project said people who are worried about that stuff were never Biden voters anyway. He told Mediaite when reached on the Friday phone call in the afternoon. And if you want to make it a competition between fabulous, I'm a billionaire, is a bigger lie than any typical political bullshitting Biden might have said. Now, outside the predictable attacks from the right, the reviews of Biden's interview with Stern were broadly positive, with many commenting on the president's affability and self-deprecating mood. Now, to be fair, Stern didn't pepper Biden with any hard-hitting questions and largely steered clear of tougher topics like Israel-Hamas war and Americans' ongoing frustrations with inflation. The commentators who shrugged off this interview as a softball are not wrong, but they are perhaps missing the forest for the trees. At this point, the campaign doesn't need an interview to excavate new ground or deliver Drudge Report siren-breaking news. They just need to get their guy out there where the Americans can see him, talking about literally anything. The press will use whatever clips they have, and if the only video they have is a scripted speech followed by Biden walking out of a room as reporters yell unanswered questions at him, that's what they'll use. Now, what's more helpful for the campaign itself, recycling and reposting clips from the same speeches and professionally produced campaign videos, or drawing from an ongoing series of new clips where Biden is cracking jokes with a well-known media personality? I think the Biden administration or the Biden campaign made a good choice of being on with Howard Stern. This is a group of people that he may not normally be hitting. And what he's doing there is kind of what Donald Trump did. You know, he went out there and tried to make a connection with people, try to show he's a normal human being, try to show that he can be funny or affable. And he did that. But keep in mind, while he is doing that in New York City, Donald Trump is sitting in a courtroom, a cold courtroom at that, and is on trial for 34 criminal charges. That's the key to remember. Joe Biden is out there campaigning, doing what a candidate is supposed to do, while Donald Trump is locked in a courtroom. And this is one of the things I've told you all along. That in itself is problematic for Donald Trump. It's hard to win an election if you can't campaign and your opponent is fucking everywhere, especially on Howard Stern's show that hits like 30 million people. So good on Joe Biden's campaign. They're doing a good job at this point. Keep it up. Keep shoving it down Donald Trump's throat and don't give up until election night. All right. Now, Representative Jamie Raskin said the U.S. Supreme Court should be moved to the Republican National Committee headquarters after some conservative justice suggested being open to arguments in favor of presidential immunity from prosecution for former President Trump. And these kind of comments are important. If you get these kind of comments coming from Congress, this is a problem for the Supreme Court. Our Supreme Court has a little problem with credibility and legitimacy, and it's well-deserved. And when Congress is coming out and calling you out and keeping that in the narrative, I think that's important. You know, we have big problems with the Supreme Court. And if we're not bitching about it and talking about it, it'll just fade away. And when things settle down, they'll get to keep doing what they're doing. Now, even after it settles down, I think it's incumbent on us to keep pushing and keep hammering these motherfuckers. We've got people sitting in the Supreme Court that should not be there. We've got people that are using this to make money for themselves, which is totally contrary to the point of having a Supreme Court. And until such time we fix that situation, it's going to be hard to maintain a democracy. Now, Raskin went on to say, there are politicians who are not even subject to popular election, unlike me. They should move the Supreme Court over to the RNC headquarters because they're acting like a bunch of partisan operatives. Now, earlier Thursday, D. John Stauer, the attorney representing Trump in oral arguments regarding the president's immunity, suggested his client could hypothetically order the military to eliminate his political rival and still be covered by presidential immunity. And that's what I said the other day, is that just that comment probably lost it for them. The idea that a president, any president, whether it be Donald Trump, Joe Biden, or anybody in the future, if they have a rival that they think might be getting too close to them or they just don't like, that they can send the military to assassinate them is absolutely ridiculous. As I said in a TikTok, and I probably said it here, at this point, the Supreme Court is detrimental to this country and to our democracy. There's no question about that with the criminality, the corruption, and the bias. If they make a decision where all presidents have immunity, whether they be Democrat or Republican, I take that as a direct attack on our form of government, of democracy. And if they're going to attack our democracy, we have to shift into a different mode. This is like a terroristic organization within our own borders. And we need to fight back to save our very lives, to save our very democracy. And it may sound like I'm getting worked up about this, but it really is that serious when you think about it. Think about this. Any president can kill an opponent or mount a coup against the very country they're representing without any kind of accountability or any kind of ramifications from doing this. That takes us from being a democracy to an authoritarian or a dictatorship, and anybody in their right mind does not want to see that. I think the Republicans do, but these are some goofy motherfuckers. Now, Justice Sonia Sotomayor asked Sauer if fundamentally evil actions such as having the military get rid of political foes would be protected from criminal prosecution. Now, the attorney who heard various scenarios from judges serving on the nation's high court said most of the scenarios could fall under the protection. That well could be an official act. As I say, just saying that loses the case for them. Raskin is a member of the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol, slammed Justice Samuel Alito's assertion that if Trump were to be criminally prosecuted, it could encourage supporters to stage more violent coups to keep the former president in office. What he fails to understand, too, is, yeah, if you charge him and jail him, it could do that, but I doubt it. We're seeing how the Republicans and the Trumple fucks are supporting him now that he's in a criminal trial. I would say the opposite is true. If you take this country and throw it into a situation where democracy is no more, you're going to see a lot of people on the other side scared to death and angry. And yeah, you'll see some violence, but it won't be from the Trumple fucks. It'll be from the Democrats. I don't want to see that. I hope that's not the case, but you can understand. A guy like me or a guy like anybody else who has kids and grandchildren, and we see this country is being destroyed and democracy is being stolen away, we're going to get mad and we're going to react. Let's not worry about the Trumple fucks. They tried it on January 6th of 2021. They failed, and a bunch of them are in jail, and now they're scared to death. You should be worried about not holding Donald Trump accountable, because there's a lot more people that will be scared to death, and they're going to strike out. Now, Jamie Raskin said Alito's remarks buy into the former president's narcissistic criminal worldview. The most astonishing thing for me today was Justice Alito's question. He actually asked whether holding the president criminally accountable for actual crimes committed, whether murder or coup or you name it, whether holding them accountable would actually encourage them to stage violent coups to stay in office to avoid prosecution, which buys completely into Donald Trump's narcissistic criminal worldview. So what if it does? Are we supposed to be scared off? Is the U.S. government, is our democracy supposed to be afraid of some dumb red meat eating, mouth breathing, dumb motherfuckers might get angry? We choose not to hold people accountable just because we're afraid of this 25% of the country getting mad and maybe rearing up? No. That's not a good fucking argument at all. And I'm ashamed that a Supreme Court justice even pulled that out of his ass. Now, Raskin went on to say, I mean, for all of American history, we've said presidents are subject to criminal prosecution if they commit crimes. I mean, if you go back to the last impeachment, Donald Trump's lawyers said that. You don't have to convict him here in the Senate, because he'll be held accountable because he's completely culpable after he's no longer president. That's what the lawyers said for Donald Trump. And now the lawyers say the exact opposite. So how can we believe them if they can't even keep the motherfucker straight? We're starting to see some pushback on the Republican side, too. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said he doesn't think presidents should be immune from criminal prosecution for their actions in office, as the Supreme Court heard arguments on the issue related to former President Trump. Now, you're probably saying, why would Mitch McConnell say that? Because the Republicans want to get rid of Donald Trump more than the Democrats, if you can believe that. But he's dragging down this party, and as long as he's there, he's going to be a cancer that continues to metastasize through the party and destroy the party. And Mitch, I'm sorry, I think you're too late. He's already destroyed the party. Now, he was asked in a Thursday interview on NBC's News Meet the Press with Kristen Welker if he believes a president is above criminal prosecution. McConnell deferred to the Supreme Court. Obviously, I don't think that, but it's not up to me to make that decision, he said. The president clearly needs some kind of immunity, or he'd be in court all the time. Really? Why would he be in court all the time? Think back to every president prior to Donald Trump. How many presidents were in court all the time, or at all? None. Not even Richard Nixon. That dumb motherfucker had enough sense to resign. McConnell went on to say, so we'll see how the Supreme Court deals with it. Now, Thursday, Supreme Court listened to about 3 hours worth of arguments. A lot of people listened to the audio, and a lot of people are saying, oh my God, they're going to give him immunity. They're going to give him immunity. No, they're not. They can't. They may try to hedge or talk around it, but they're not going to give him immunity. It would cause too many problems, not only for the Democrats, but for the country as a whole, for the form of government that we have, and it would cause problems for the Supreme Court. As I said, whatever immunity they give Donald Trump, they give to Joe Biden. As I said earlier, they can take Joe Biden can take Donald Trump and take him out, according to Donald Trump's lawyers. He can go into the Supreme Court and take those guys out, put them in Guantanamo Bay, or just have them killed. He could do that, according to Donald Trump's lawyers. Now, Donald Trump and his lawyers are dumb motherfuckers. There's no question about that. And while the Supreme Court justices might be corrupt and criminal, they certainly aren't stupid. They can see the writing on the wall. They can see where Donald Trump is headed. He is going to get convicted in the Manhattan District. Donald Trump's time is done. His power, his authority is fading every day and soon will be gone. Why would it make any sense for them to stick with him at this point? It wouldn't. It just wouldn't. And again, there I go talking about logic and common sense, and I know that always doesn't fit with other people's mindsets, but that's the way I think. Sometimes I'll be wrong. Most of the time I'll be right, but it's not because I'm a genius, because I'm taking the emotions out. I'm not being fearful. I'm looking at the facts and then trying to analyze it and realize how things will really happen. This is the one thing people do to themselves every day, and almost everybody I know does this. Something will happen or something will be upcoming, and they will worry and worry and worry. And then when it comes down to it, it doesn't happen. And they'll say, oh, I'm so relieved it didn't happen. But aren't you angry? Aren't you upset that you wasted all that time worrying and being stressed out for no good reason at all? Don't waste your time worrying or be stressed out. What's going to happen is going to happen. You can't control it. You shouldn't worry about it. Just do your best and hope for the best and expect the best. And 9 times out of 10, you'll get the best. All right. We are going to wrap up the Rational Boomer podcast. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. I hope you have a great day, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.